Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we are talking about Anna Karenina, Part 3, Chapter 26. The discussion prompts that I had for you guys for today, or for yesterday's chapter, I should say, were these. Discussion prompt number 1, boobies. End of discussion prompts. I am Norwegian, said boobies. Hell yeah, brother. Somastars replied, saying, oh, you guys, with a smiley face. JMama8779 said, this chapter was great. Excuse me, no more tea. Going over here now. It was pretty funny. It's a very comedic chapter, really, wasn't it? This guy who just could not resist looking at the cleavage. We've all been there. When there's that cleavage that's just so there, you know, it's so there. And everything, like the top and the necklace and the shoulder line and the chin and the underarm lines, everything is just pointing. It's like everything around it is a big arrow pointing in the center of attention, being that damn cleavage. And you feel like your neck is going to explode when you try not to look. Or your eyes might pop out of your head. We've all been there. We've all been there. And it's not even a pervy thing, I don't think. It's not like I really want to perv. It's just, I don't know, it's like a curiosity thing. Simply Productive said, I love the first half. We've got a guy who contradicts everything, hates government, but is high in the government, wants women's lib, but has his stay-at-home wife. What a little conundrum. He reminds me of a friend of mine, the kind of guy who is an anarchist, but every time we meet to complain about capitalism, it's at Starbucks. As for the boobs, as a woman, it's funny reading the other perspective. I am also quite disproportionate. I have to go to specialty stores to get tailored because I cannot shop in any box stores. So I'm used to having no one meet my eye, men and women alike. So I think it's hilarious that his solution is to look over there. Huh, a lamp, cool. It happens pretty constantly, but it's not an insult, just people being silly. Yeah, it's really an impulse. It's like if something goes pop behind you, right, just randomly right now, pop, and it's like right behind you, it's like, oh, what was that? Like, you look, but actually you would probably look towards the pop noise before you even think, like, what was that? It's an impulse, you know? Anyway, I'm just excusing my own accidental boob lookings, which I'm sure I've done over the years. Chapter 27 of the book goes like this. If it were not a pity to give up what has been set going, after spending so much toil, I would throw it all up, sell out, and, like Nicholas Ivanich, go away to hear La Belle Helena, said the landowner, a pleasant smile lighting up his wise old face. But we see you don't give it up, said Nicholas Ivanich Sviatsky. So it seems it has its disadvantages. Just one advantage. I live in my own house, which is neither bought nor hired, and there is always the hope that the people will come to their senses. You would hardly believe what drunkenness and debauchery there is. The families have all separated. They have not a horse nor a cow left. They are starving, yet if you hire one of them as a labourer, he'll spoil and break things, and will even lodge complaints with the magistrate. On the other hand, you too complain to the magistrate. I complain? Never. Nothing could induce me to. It would cause such gossip that one would be sorry one tried it. At the works now they took money in advance and went off. And what did the magistrate do? Why, acquitted them. Things are only kept going by the village tribunal and the village elder. He thrashes them in the old style. If it were not for that, one had better give up everything and flee to the end of the earth. The landowner evidently meant to tease Sviatsky, but the latter did not take offence. On the contrary, he evidently enjoyed it. Well, you see, we carry on our work without such measures, and I and Levin, and he, Savetsky said, smiling and pointing to the other landowner. Yes, Michael Petrovich gets on, but ask him how. Is he what you would call rational farming? Said the landowner, ostentatiously using the word rational. My farming is very simple, thank heaven, said Michael Petrovich. My farming is to have money ready for the autumn taxes. The peasants come along and say, be a father to us, help us. Well, of course, they are all our own people, our neighbours. One pities them and lends them what they want, and have to pay the one-third then due. But one says, remember, lads, I help you, and you must help me when necessary, at the oat-sowing and hay-making, at harvest time. And one agrees for so much work from each family. But it is true there are some dishonest ones among them. Levin, who had been acquainted with these patriarchal methods, exchanged a glance with Sviatsky, and, interrupting Michael Petrovich, addressed the landowner with the grey moustache. How then, in your opinion, should one carry on at present? Why, carry on the way Michael Petrovich does, either pay the peasants in kind or rent it to them. That is quite possible, but the wealth of the community as a whole is ruined by such methods. Where my land used to yield ninefold under serfdom, with good management, it only now yields threefold when the labourers are paid in kind. Russia has been ruined by the emancipation of the peasants. Sviatsky looked at Levin with smiling eyes and even made a just perceptible sarcastic sign to him, ridiculing the old man. But Levin did not consider the landowner's words ridiculous. He understood him better than he did Sviatsky. Much of what the landowner said subsequently to prove that Russia was ruined by the emancipation even appeared to him to be very true, new, and undeniable. The landowner was evidently expressing his own thoughts, which people rarely do, thoughts to which he had been led not by a desire to find some occupation for an idle mind, but by the conditions of his life, thoughts which he had hatched in his rural solitude and considered from every side. The fact of the matter is, you see, that progress can only be achieved by authority, he said, evidently wishing to show that education was not foreign to him. Take, for instance, the reforms of Peter the Great, Catherine, and Alexander. Take European history. In the realm of agriculture, it is still more so. To name only potatoes, they even had to be introduced by force into this country. Our primitive ploughs, you know, have not always been used. They must have been introduced at the time of the Rurik princes, and doubtless by force. Now, in our case, we landlords, under serfdom, applied improved methods of agriculture. We introduced the winnowing machines and all sorts of tools, organized the carting of manure, all by our authority, and the peasants at first resisted and afterwards copied us. Now that serfdom has been abolished, and the power taken out of our hands, our agriculture, where it has been brought to a high level, must descend to a savage and primitive condition. That is how I look at the matter. But what? If your farming is rational, you can carry it on with hired labour, said Sviatsky. I have no power, by means of whose labour am I to carry it on? Here we have it. The labour power is the chief element of agriculture, thought Levin. Hired labourers, replied Sviatsky. Hired labourers don't want to work well with good tools. Our labourers understand one thing only, to get drunk like swine, and when drunk, to spoil everything you put into their hands. They'll water the horses at the wrong time, tear good harness, change a wheel with an iron tyre for one without, or drop a bolt into the threshing machine in order to break it. They hate to see anything that is beyond them. That is why the level of agriculture has gone down. The land is neglected, overgrown with wormwood, or given to the peasants, and where 8 million bushels used to be produced, they now only produce 800,000. The wealth of the nation has decreased if the same step had been taken with due consideration. And he began to develop his plan of emancipation, which might have prevented this dislocation. But it did not interest Levin, and as soon as the landlord had finished, Levin returned to the first proposition, and trying to get Sviatsky to express his views seriously, said to him, the fact that our agriculture is sinking, that is impossible. Our relation to the peasants, being what it is to carry our rational farming profitably, is quite true. I don't think so, said Sviatsky, now quite serious. All I see is that we do not know how to farm, and that our farming in the days of serfdom was not at too high, but on the contrary, at too low a level. We have no machines, no good horses, no proper management, and we do not know how to keep accounts. Ask any farmer. He cannot tell you what is profitable for you and what is not. Italian bookkeeping, said the landowner scornfully. Keep your accounts as you will. If they spoil everything you have got, you won't have a profit. Why spoil everything? They will break your inferior Russian threshers. but they cannot break my steam threshing machine, the poor Russian hack, what do you call it, of the breed that you have to drag along by the tail, can be spoiled. But if you keep Flemish drays or good Russo-Danish horses, they won't spoil them. And it's by such means that we must raise agriculture to a higher level. Yes, if one can afford it, Nicholas Ivanich, it is all very well for you, but I have a son at the university to keep, and to pay for the little one's education at the secondary school, so that I cannot buy Flemish drays. We've got banks for such cases. Yes, and you finish by being sold up at by auction. No, thank you. I do not believe that it is either advisable or profitable, possible, to raise the level of agriculture, said Levin. I go in for it and have means, but I never could do anything. I do not know to whom banks are useful. I, at any rate, never spent money on improvements without loss. Expensive cattle bring me a loss, and machinery too. Yes, that is quite true, said the landowner with the grey moustache, and he even laughed with pleasure. And I am not the only one, continued Levin. I refer you to many farmers who carry on rational farming, and with rare exceptions they all make a loss on it. You just tell us, is your farming profitable, said Levin, and at once noticed a momentary expression of fright, which he had observed on Savatsky's face. When he tried to penetrate beyond the reception rooms of his mind. Besides, this question was not quite honest. His hostess had told him at tea that he had engaged that summer a German from Moscow, an expert bookkeeper, and paid him 500 rubles to audit their accounts, and he found that they lost 3,000 rubles odd a year on their farming. She did not remember the exact figure, though the German had calculated it down to a quarter of a kopeck. The landowner smiled when the profits of Savatsky's farming were mentioned, evidently aware of the sort of profits that his neighbour, the Marshal of the Nobility, was able to make. It may be unprofitable, answered Savatsky, but that only shows that I am either a bad farmer or that I spend capital to raise the rent. Oh dear, the rent, exclaimed Levin, quite horrified. There may be such a thing as rent in Europe where the land has been improved by the labour put into it, but with us the land gets poorer by the labourer put into it, and that is by being ploughed up. Therefore, there can be no such thing as rent. No rent. Rent is natural law. Then we are outside that law. Rent does not explain anything in our case, but on the contrary only causes confusion. But you had better tell us the theory of rent can be, of how the rent... Tell us how the theory of rent can be. Would you like some curds and whey, Mary? Send us some curds and whey, or some raspberries here, said Savatsky to his wife. This year the raspberries are lasting an extraordinarily long time. And Savatsky got up cheerfully and moved away, evidently regarding the conversation as finished at the point where Levin, it seemed, to be just beginning. Having lost his interlocutor, Levin continued the conversation with the landowner, trying to prove to him that all our difficulties arise from the fact that we do not wish to understand the characteristics and habits of our labourers, but the landowner, like everybody who thinks individually and in solitude, was obtuse to other thoughts and tenacious of his own. He insisted that the Russian peasant was a pig and loved piggishness, and that to lend him out of the pigsty, power was needed, but there was no such power. A stick was necessary, but we had exchanged the thousand-year-old stick for some kind of lawyers and prisons, in which the good-for-nothing stinking peasants were fed with good soup and provided with a given number of cubic feet of air. Why do you think, asked Levin, trying to bring him back to the question, that we could not establish some relation with labour which would make it remunerative? It will never be done with Russians. We have no power, answered the landowner. What new conditions could be discovered, Savatsky, said Savatsky, who, having eaten his curds and whey and lit a cigarette, now returned to the disputants. Every possible relation to the power of labour has been defined and investigated, he said. The remnant of barbarism, the primitive commune with its reciprocal bonds, falls to pieces of itself when serfdom is abolished, and there is nothing left but free labour. Its forms are defined and ready, and we must accept them. The labourer, the hired man, the farmer, you cannot get away from them. But the rest of Europe is not satisfied with that system. No, it is dissatisfied and is seeking new methods. It will probably find them. All I wish to say is, said Levin, why should we not seek them for ourselves? Because it would be just the same as inventing new methods of building a railway. They are invented and ready. But if they don't suit us, if they are stupid, said Levin, And again he noticed a look of fear in the eyes of Savetsky. Oh yes, it is all child's play for us. We have discovered what Europe is looking for. I know all that, but excuse me, do you know what has been accomplished in Europe with regard to the labour question? Not much. The question is at present occupying the best brains in Europe. There is the Schulz-Delitzsch trend. Then there is the whole gigantic literature on the labour question with the most liberal Lassalle tendency. The Mulhausen system, that is already a fact. I expect you know about it. I have some idea about it, but very vague. Oh, you only say so. I am sure you know about it, just as well as I do. I am, of course, not a professor of sociology, but it interests me, and really, if it interests you, you'd better study the matter. But what have they arrived at? Excuse me. The landowners had risen, and Savetsky, having again checked Levin in his disagreeable habit of prying beyond the reception rooms of his mind, went to see his visitors off. And that's the end of the chapter. Thank you very much for listening to that. I'll see you tomorrow.